The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I watched
the Theranos doc this weekend.
Oh,
so.
How was it?
It was good. She talks like this.
Would you mind if Darren came back to the show?
Hi, guys.
Oh, hey, Darren.
Sorry, Elizabeth Holmes was here.
No, it's understandable. Oh, does she talk like that? I didn't pick up.
Oh,
yeah.
Carson was so freaked. Did you guys watch it?
If you've seen Theranos?
Okay,
yeah.
So you know Theranos, though, and the whole big scandal around it or whatever. And she just has these very prominent features. She's very tall. You know, okay. She kind of pulls like the Steve Jobs thing off or the Darren Karp thing where she just wears black all the time with like a turtleneck.
Same.
And her voice is so deep. And she like literally never blinks, but has the biggest eyes ever. So she's like kind of terrifying. And they do a lot of like close-up shots with her. And Carson couldn't handle it. So all weekend I was just talking like this.
Oh, to really freak her out a little bit more. Wonderful.
And I finished Adnan Syed, which I know that you didn't
I have to get
finish.
Through it. I've been very busy on the weekends. I haven't had a chance to watch.
As if I didn't love Rabia Chaudhry
really
anymore
yes.
than I already do. This is going to reinvigorate your love for her, John.
I heard it's all done now, right?
It's done. It was four-part series. It came out. We're actually recording this on a Monday.
Yeah.
But it came out yesterday, Sunday, last Sunday.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had heard, I don't know if it was actually Rabia who tweeted it or somebody, but they were saying, I think it was Rabia, that episodes 3 and 4 is when it gets really interesting.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, and they, it's really, you know, like up to date. Like talk about like how he didn't you know, how he got rejected this last time around. Oh yeah. And like they reached out to Jay to have phone conversations with him in January of 2019. So it's all very present and gives the whole historical context. And it does a really good, it made me think of our show because it does a really great job, I think, of talking about Haman Lee and not just Adnan.
Right, because
she's the victim.
Right, she's the one that, you know, was murdered.
Exactly.
Whenever, you know, you and I are doing, and we have done a lot of Q&A type things just this month, but when people ask me what case kind of sticks with us the most or what got us into true crime, I always make sure I say it's the Haman Lee case and not the Adnan Syed case, because although it's an injustice potentially to Adnan,
totally,
she is the victim here, you know? So it's technically her murder case that I find interesting.
Absolutely. But anyway, you should watch it.
I will absolutely be watching it. I actually finally have some free time this week and this weekend, so I will be getting to it. Okay, well, Matt's in the room. He showed up a little bit tardy to the party, if you will.
That's that's a Bravo show that you're mentioning. You're so woke.
Kim. Yeah, I'm so woke.
We are recording this on April 1st. Which is an April Fool's Day. And I'd like to say that the joke was that Matt came late.
Yeah.
But, like, that's every day.
Yeah.
So it's just another day in the office.
In the office, in the studio. So welcome, Matt.
Should we be nice to Matt today?
No, of course not.
Oh, okay.
But
it's
however,
just an idea.
Yeah, just an idea.
I floated it.
How dare you?
I know, I'm disgusting.
But Gina the Staff Boozer is joining
us.
Matt's just like rolling his neck. He's
like, not
this
even
is
sitting.
So annoying.
He's not even sitting.
Well, he politely let Gina have the microphone this time.
A lot of our Facebook fans laughed at, or our fans in general, of when you said that someone said on Instagram that Matt was a snack.
Oh, yeah.
And he had like dropped the martini shaker in the back and was like,
listen, those are other people's words, not mine.
They were like, I just pissed myself laughing at that. I was like, yeah, that's good.
Hi, Gina.
Hey, Gina.
Hey.
What are we drinking?
We are going to be trying a new hemp drink. It's called Hemp Tales, and it's new to market, but you have to pick what flavor you want.
Oh. Yes.
Is it Hemp Tales like DuckTales? Like,
I was just thinking DuckTales.
Oh, I was thinking that's a Wishbone.
Don't sing it. And don't. Wait, why are you confusing DuckTales and Wishbone?
Wait a minute. I was thinking, what's the story? And I was going to say DuckTales. That doesn't make any sense.
What's the story? DuckTales.
But it's Wishbone. And so what wasn't Duck? Didn't DuckTales have like an amazing theme song?
Woo.
Yeah.
Tales of Terror.
Yes. Something, of course, something. Gina knows.
We can't sing on the show.
I know,
so.
Gina. Just mime it or
something.
Lawyers
are sending emails.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the actual issue here. Gina, go ahead.
So hemp is a cousin of hops, and so it's not going to get you high.
I know that, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
But it will have the aroma of hemp, so you need to decide if you want the original flavor, the citrus flavor, which is blood orange, or passion fruit.
What is the original flavor? What kind of, like, does it have a, like, is there a flavor to it? Yeah, right. It's grass.
Matt smells like a giant blunt.
Oh. I'll take that one.
Yeah, that's definitely more Darren.
What do you prefer?
I haven't tried them yet, so I'm going to be trying them.
Okay. Well, all four or five of us should have different ones.
Well, I was thinking the blood orange just is giving me a little bit of a flashback to when I was injured and attacked with an orange peel, so I think I will pass.
PTSD.
On passion fruit tea, Tazo tea is like my favorite, so I'll have Tazo passion fruit.
Sponsors.
You know, anything with fruit in the name is probably what I want.
Honestly, all of them sound so good. I was going to say passion fruit, but let me do original.
Okay.
I'll try original. Megan,
what do you want? Oh, good.
Good. All three of us. Matt, no one cares.
Yeah, no one cares what Matt's drinking. Okay.
Matt will have an original.
Do you ever feel like Matt secretly gets like his feelings hurt?
I think about this a lot.
Yeah, do you? Okay.
I hope not.
I hope not too.
Because I don't like the trolls on the internet.
Exactly.
And I feel like this show is like making fun of them in that way, by being so off.
Thank
it's like,
you.
We're not hiding by the eye on the internet. We're being mean to Matt's face.
Right.
We're progressive trolls.
Well, the other thing, too, is it doesn't come from nowhere. You know, it's a reaction to a lot of his decisions.
And I will say, Matt, so when John and I were G-chatting today, we had thought, I was like, you know, John, I'm thinking about an April Fool's joke, but like, you know, I'm having so much trouble because like everyone's primed for it now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Everyone's ready for it. And it's like almost not fun anymore. And and John like created a plan or whatever. And I said to him, thank you, Gina. And I said to him, I was like, for as dumb as Matt is, I really feel like he'll catch on to this and won't take it as a joke. And you laughed really, really hard. And I was like, I can't believe I'm just calling Matt stupid and dumb in a G-chat to you.
I would just like to point out to my boss that I did not call you stupid and dumb. I think that you're a genius and that you do a lot of great things.
Matt, he didn't agree, but
exactly.
He also didn't disagree.
No, I said Matt would definitely catch on. And if you want to know exactly what we were saying, you can check out last week's Another Shot because we talked about it there.
I am still laughing. I think it was in another. Yeah, it was in Another Shot about us laughing at Matt just being on stage with a CMS saying vagina. Like, I could have the worst day, and thinking about that imagery of him just saying that, like, just.
Well, I just love that he did it in front of a packed house. You know, it would be different if it was like a small get together, but it was a sold out show.
400 people
standing there.
Vagina?
Cueing people to respond.
Let's cheers before I taste this.
Yes. That was very fast.
I do
Gina.
Hope that Matt does not get offended.
Yes,
we can give Matt another shot
fun.
On his own so we can.
Cheers
bitches.
Cheers. Look at all
Oh, but I do have an update about that.
Okay, and this looks like ginger ale. And I love ginger ale. I love a ginger anything except ginger beer. I didn't love ginger beer.
This tastes just like ginger ale to me.
Unless ginger beer is in something, in which case it's good.
You guys think far too much of yourself if you think I give a fuck what either of you think.
Well,
all right?
Wait, how much alcohol is in this, G? How much is in the can?
8%.
8%? That's actually kind of a lot.
Yeah, a little more than beer, she says. I like the taste. I will say the smell of it, it smells like roast beef. I don't know.
Okay, mine smells like gasoline a little bit, but not in a bad, it doesn't taste bad.
Does this not smell like Thanksgiving?
Mine smells like gasoline.
I don't know if that's what they're
Yours smell more fruity.
I smell like mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yum.
And a Thanksgiving dinner. Gina's like, what is wrong
with
you?
Let me just piggyback off of what Matt said, where he's like, I don't give a flying fuck what you guys think.
Megan smell. Yeah.
So I went to a Knicks game last Saturday with my best friend Brian, who was in the front row.
Yes, I saw your stories.
And it was in the front row. And he was like, yo, Matt asked me to do a podcast about you. Because, like, I guess when we were all, like, hanging out and drunk, yeah. Matt went up to Brian and was like, do you get abused by Darren, like, as much as I do? And Brian was like, yeah, man. Like, it's fucking tough. So they're going to start their own podcast.
Interesting. Like an after show type
right, like
of thing?
About me.
Oh, just you.
Yeah. So maybe you'll be a guest. Maybe, yeah, please promote Martinis and Murder when you're on it. But Brian, like, reaffirmed. He's like, does Matt really want to do it? I was like, please don't write back to him because Matt's dead serious and he'll do it.
Right.
Like, Matt's dumb enough to do it.
It's not going to be its own podcast. It's going to be a secret episode that you don't know about on Martinis and Murder coming soon.
Oh.
Yikes.
There we go.
We'll look for that, everybody.
Good thing
Matt was screaming into the mic. It's fine.
Monday.
How many drinks have you had, Matt? It's fine. We should get into this week's episode because
I actually really like this drink, but yeah, it is a doozy.
It's good. I just can't get over the mashed potatoes and roast beef smell. Megan agreed with me, by the way.
I don't smell roast beef. You smell roast beef?
I smell like, it's like cranberry sauce.
Okay, cranberry sauce, like fruity.
Wait, we went from roast beef.
Roast beef, mashed potatoes to cranberry sauce.
Thanksgiving, right?
Roast beef to mashed potatoes and gravy to cranberry sauce.
This is Willy Wonka's fucking chocolate factory up in here.
Let me tell you, the taste of it is great, but the aroma is just throwing me a touch.
I mean, never has it... What's the drink called again, Gina?
Hemp tails.
Never has there been a better promo because... Not necessarily like we're saying great things, but who out there doesn't want to know what the fuck we're talking about
at
and
this
everyone's
point.
Gonna go buy it.
Well, what's the story, Hemp Tales? Thanksgiving, apparently.
What's the theme song again?
What's the story? Hemp Tales. I don't know. I don't know why this happens to us on the show.
I'm dying.
Hemp Tales sponsor us.
Yes, Hemp Tales.
I'm in actually. It tastes like I can't believe it's a boozy ginger ale. I don't taste alcohol at all.
I don't know if I'll be able to finish it per se, but it's good. It is a good drink, anyway.
Tron.
All right, so we've talked about what we're drinking.
Let's get into the
gruesome part of today's show. So, one night towards the end of 1977, a group of hikers found a brutally mutilated naked woman, and that's a little bit of a to whet your appetite as to what's happening on today's show. LA Weekly wrote that she was, quote, found on a dirt road snaking through tangled ravines near Marlon Brando's Mulholland Drive home, end quote, in Los Angeles.
Have you ever been to Mulholland Drive?
Probably.
It's gorgeous.
I've been in LA a couple of times. No, I don't go nearly as much as you. Yeah, I know that's like the nice area. Is that in Beverly Hills? No.
Not in Beverly Hills, but it's like a long drive. Yeah, up in the valley.
Well, the young woman had been partially disrobed and a leg of her jeans was wrapped around her throat, according to Mark of a Killer, which is a show on Oxygen, by the way. Her head had been crushed and there was a large rock near her body.
Ugh.
So that's very gruesome. Blood covered the corpse and she was positioned in a kneeling position with her head down and a hand placed between her legs. It indicated to authorities that the victim was most likely sexually assaulted. Authorities canvassed the area looking for any clues or witnesses but found nothing. What they didn't find also interested them. Authorities couldn't find a purse, any ID, or any jewelry on the woman. And we've talked a lot on this show about these are the types of things that are indicators of whether or not
robbery. Seems like, Susan Cox Powell had everything there in the house, so that was,
Exactly. Only through fingerprints could they eventually ID her as 19-year-old candy striper Jill Barcombe. And to clarify for anyone who has a dirty mind, a candy striper does not get naked. She is a volunteer staff member at a hospital.
Oh, good.
Which I was like, I don't know where that's from, but that's the research we have in front
of us.
Well,
I feel like people like to misplace striper with stripper.
Right.
And then they just get into a whole long thing.
We should confirm, Matt, that is what we're saying here. Striper, right?
Yeah, candy striper.
Gotcha. All right.
What's a candy stripper?
Listen, candy. I'm into candy. Female strippers, not my thing, okay?
Yeah,
Which, if you don't know that at this point in the show, what are you doing?
Yeah, right, exactly.
But now brace yourself for the next sentence because it's a living nightmare. Jill was working at the hospital trying to pursue a career as a nurse when the coroner reported she was repeatedly strangled, unconscious, allowed to regain consciousness, and then strangled again over and over while being repeatedly raped, sodomized, and tortured. There didn't appear to be any leads.
That sounds like the worst form of torture ever.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine anything worse than this. And here's the funny, not the funny thing, but, you know, we typically open the show with, you know, some background information, how right. they grew up.
No, you we started with, like, right we found her on a dirt road naked.
Yes, we went right into it.
That's why this case is super interesting.
I was just going to say that.
So
yes.
I want to talk about a little about Georgia Wisted. 5 weeks later, Georgia Wisted, a 27-year-old nurse, goes out for drinks with some coworkers. One of the coworkers was a little worried about her, a very pretty girl living on the beach alone. According to Mark of a Killer, she said, quote, "Aren't you a little worried about living alone?" And Georgia replied laughing, quote, "I've got a hammer, and if anybody breaks into my house, I will hit them with my hammer."
Well, I don't know if I've ever told this full story on the show, but when I was under the impression that there was a ghost in my house, mm-hmm. I feel like I've talked. Was that on this show? I don't remember. I've just talked out loud. Megan saying yes. Thank you, Megan. I remember jumping up and grabbing my tennis racket. And I was like, if someone's going to be in this house, I know how to swing a tennis racket to make maximum damage. So hammer, tennis racket.
But like,
you know.
Don't you think a tennis racket wouldn't get maximum damage?
Here's the thing. You would think that.
Okay.
But think about the strings and how tightly strung they are.
Yeah.
You hit somebody on like the side of the face or the head with something like that, it's going to do a lot of like tearing of the skin.
Oh yeah. I mean, I feel like a tennis racket's better than like my hands, but maybe not as good as a hammer.
Certainly. But then again, like I feel like a hammer is so small. Well, I guess you get one good blow with a hammer and it's
kind of
over, right?
Yeah, good.
Right. I'm glad we figured that part out here.
Well, the very next day she failed to show up for work and police came to perform a wellness check. She was found bludgeoned to death in bed. Chris, the hammer wasn't good.
Right.
Blood spatter covering the walls and there was a hammer next to her. Mm-hmm. The deputy DA told Mark of a Killer, quote, "She heard him coming. She got her hammer out. He took it away from her. He raped her with it. Mm. He brutalized her with it. And then he beat her to death with it."
Oh my God.
I was found that she had been repeatedly strangled and allowed to regain consciousness, most likely to induce more fear and suffering. And like the previous crime scene, there were things missing. A jewelry box next to her bed was empty and open. It was beginning to look a lot like a serial killer. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me about the conscious, unconscious thing, because I don't know, but I don't know how long it takes for someone to regain consciousness after they hadn't.
Yeah.
But I imagine it's not like immediate.
Yeah.
And so this feels like it would take a long time. And if I feel like if I was killing someone or making, I would want to get in and get out.
Right.
Right. Like waiting around sort of allows for a longer opportunity, an easier opportunity for you to get caught in the act. Right.
The most chilling part of this case. I
right.
think,
it's just slow and tempered.
Can you imagine like you're coming to and then this is happening again? What?
I mean, to me, it makes me think of like,
you're usually only out for a few seconds.
Yeah.
When someone like blacks you out, if you're out for longer than that, you're suffering brain damage.
Oh, interesting.
That's a good point.
But
take
still, even that, that is a good point. Even if it just seems like you'd want a one and done type of thing. And to Matt's point, I feel it reminds me of, you know, when like your kids and you're like dunking each other's heads in the pool and you can't like necessarily get out and you're like a little bit of suffering that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like to me. Just like it or what I would think that
it
feels
like.
It's just extreme claustrophobia. Can't get out. Can't do anything. And you just cannot catch your breath.
Totally. And it also makes you want to kind of put yourself in the mind of a killer here. It's like, are they trying to just kill this person and rob them? Or are they trying to maximize intense suffering? I mean, those are two very kind of different intentions.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, next up, it was Charlotte Lamb, a 32-year-old legal secretary in Santa Monica. On her birthday, her family tried to ring her, but she didn't answer. Police did a wellness check, but she was not in her apartment. However, her car was found in the parking lot. Then, a few days later, a man in an apartment complex 15 miles south went to do laundry in the basement and found her. Mark of a Killer said, quote, "He found the light, flipped it on, and there was blood all over the place, and he just turned around, ran up the stairs, went to the neighbors, phoned the police. He was so scared," end quote. Imagine like just doing your Sunday laundry, flipping on a switch.
In your apartment? I know.
I know, right? New Yorkers don't know what that's like. But then like, you know, flipping on the light and, you know, you're in a basement and there's just blood everywhere. That would freak me out. Basements in general just really freak me out.
Well, and for some reason, like when I think of that and like you immediately call the police and you say whatever you want to say, like, you don't want to contaminate the crime scene any further. You want to prevent other people from going in there. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, this is the problem too, which I feel like is a lot of worry. Like, my first worry would be, yeah, let me call the police. My second worry would be like, are they thinking I'm going to be implicated in this?
Yeah, yeah.
I got to call a lawyer now just because I want to do my fucking laundry on a Sunday. Like, that's what's so scary about it. Like, people are not as willing to come forward because they think they're going to be implicated.
I completely agree. Her hands were tucked behind her back. She was naked and a leather shoe strap had been used to strangle her.
Oh, God.
Once again, nothing at the scene gave authorities any leads, but her friend said she had gone out to a new club alone, and witnesses at the club said she was wearing jewelry that was not found at the scene. So again, it sounds like
robbery.
There's a the only odd report police had was a strange man going around taking pictures in the area during that night. Everyone is frightened. It's the 70s and serial killers like, you know, Ted Bundy, the Hillside Strangler was another one. Very active. 6 months later, police arrest two men in connection to a series of murders in Los Angeles known as the Hillside Strangler murders. A reporter told Mark of the Killer, quote, 27-year-old Kenneth Bianchi had been charged in connection to 10 of the Hillside Strangler killings. Bianchi only became the prime suspect after his arrest for two similar murders in Washington State, end quote. So it sounds like they finally may have found somebody connected to this, but let's see what happens. The second man arrested was Bianchi's cousin. Police believe the two could have been responsible for the three murders we have mentioned, but the two denied killing any of those women. It turned out Bianchi and his cousin were definitely not involved in any way with the murders of Jill Barcombe, Georgia Wisted, or Charlotte Lamb. 6 months after they arrested Bianchi and his cousin, a 21-year-old computer programmer named Jill Parento, lots of fun names to pronounce, was found
dead. You did a
good
job.
Thank you, thank you. She was also nude, raped, and strangled repeatedly, just like the others. And once again, a jewelry box is found open and empty.
This is like the Golden State Killer. It's
right, exactly. It's all the same.
Mementos.
Yeah.
Mementos.
Little keepsakes.
Yes.
Little trophies.
Well, and of course, there was no leads, no witnesses, no fingerprints. It seemed to be an incredibly sadistic man who wanted to dominate and brutalize his victims in a way that sexually satisfied him. And he was also clearly, as Matt mentioned, a collector of some sorts.
Well, a week later, Robin Samso and her friend Bridget went to the beach. Bridget told Mark of a Killer, quote, coming from our north is a man in what looks like very inexpensive polyester, very pasty skin,
Matt.
Hair blowing in the wind with all these scraggly curls.
Kind of Matt.
And nothing seemed normal from the second I dialed in on this guy. Nothing. He walked up and he said, can I take your pictures? I kind of grabbed Robin's arm and I said, no. And as I kind of dragged her a little backwards, he reached out and touched her leg. And all of a sudden, my neighbors popped up and she goes, Bridget? Is everything okay? And all of a sudden, he just ducked with that camera and took off going south. My neighbor, she goes, that wasn't normal. That wasn't normal. And I also said, no, he was, you know, scary. She goes, you girls need to get off the beach.
Well, to
terrifying.
To be fair, was this one of those telescope photographers that comes up and wants to take, have you ever been on the beach? I don't know if this is just an Ocean City, Maryland thing, but they have these people that go around and they take your picture and you can go get them developed in these little keychain telescopes. You have no idea what I'm talking about.
I mean, like, I picture it, but like, no.
Megan knows.
No.
What, Matt?
I've never heard of this.
If someone went up to me in the beaches of New Jersey and did that, I'd literally break their balls
off.
All
right. Well, I have a couple of scope photos from when I was a kid.
This is why Matt has no balls. He did this to me once.
If you're from the Ocean City, Maryland, if you've ever been there and you know what I'm talking about, let me know. Thanks.
Also, if you're in Ocean City, Maryland, you think John is fucking nuts, let me know.
Let Darren know that.
Robin headed out because she had to be up at a ballet class. Her friend Bridget told Mark of a Killer, quote, there was something that was so unsettling about that man.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah. I said, don't walk, take my bicycle, and don't stop.
Oh, my God.
And those were the last words I said to her. She didn't come home that night. Her mother frantically called the ballet studio, but she never made it there. 9 days later, they found Robin in the hills of Sierra Madre. CBS reported that by then her body had no hair. Mm. Quote, there were 12 days for the animals to scavenge Robin's remains. By the time the fire crew actually found her body, she was just bones.
I mean, 12 days is a pretty quick amount of time for that kind of stuff to happen. I feel like...
I mean, listen, no hair. Like, after all of it, not even like...
Right, something.
12 days, listen, animals are going to get to you, but just... Her mother said she always wore earrings, and despite dental records matching the body to Robin, they were missing. Mm-hmm. Robin Samso was just 12 years old.
I was not expecting
Me
that.
Me neither.
Sorry.
It was looking like Robin was likely the fifth victim. Clearly, jewelry was like the deer head on the wall for this killer. His prize, his possession. That's what he wanted.
Yeah.
The Huntington Beach Police Department had Robin's friend work with a sketch artist to visualize the man that approached them. He had a pointed chin and curly hair. Quickly, a parole officer in the police department ID'd the sketch as possibly Rodney Alcala. An officer told Mark of a Killer, quote, "The Hillside Strangler Task Force were looking at people, looking at records. They're looking for registered sex offenders. Rodney Alcala's name had popped up. Rodney was on parole at that time for a crime against a child, and Alcala's a registered sex offender. So he's a very strong person of interest."
There's a lot of details here that are pointing to him as it pertains to this particular case. Well, after working the case one day, one of the lead investigators went home and turned on the television to The Dating Game.
Yay!
Which, if Darren, you know, we were alive at this time, maybe you would be hosting.
I could have been.
Potentially.
You could have caught Rodney Alcala.
That's right.
Done.
Yeah, done.
I was clearly born in the wrong time.
You guys at least know the show, right? A girl asks three guys questions from behind a wall and chooses her date based on the answers. We've heard of The Dating Game. I was going to say Andy hosted
Love Connection,
which was not the same thing. One of the questions the girl asked was, quote, "What's your best time?" End quote.
Weird.
And bachelor number one answered, "The best time is at night, the nighttime." When the girl eventually picked bachelor number one, the host said, "Say hello to Rodney Alcala."
Oh my God.
Rodney came on, "Come on and say hello," end quote.
Wow, John actually has a future as a game host, I think.
He does.
As an announcer, maybe not the host. Shout out to Rod Roddy from The Price is Right. Love him, the announcer.
But not Rodney Alcala. Let's just say, you're welcome.
Good call there.
good call there.
The lead investigator had just heard the name Rodney Alcala for the first time about an hour prior. Now imagine investigating. Wow. You turn on your TV and he's on television.
On a dating game.
On The Dating Game.
And also, how bizarrely cocky are you to be a fucking serial killer?
And then go on
and
TV.
And then go on TV. When also you're a registered sex offender? Like, that's not going to raise a red flag. Nobody's going to...
Let's talk about the casting for that.
Draw attention to yourself.
Let's talk about the casting. Are you not looking at the background that these people are registered sex offenders? We're just letting every Matt fucking person onto this goddamn show? My God. I mean, that's a good point. But at the same time, I think, yeah, it's a matter of cockiness and, yeah, it's a matter of mental illness. But a lot of people, I think, hiding in plain sight.
Definitely.
Works for them. You're not.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, I recently was talking with my sister because, you know, I have some young kids in my family. And most states have a sex offender list where you can literally look at a map and see where they live near you.
Yeah.
Let me just say, like, you know, of course, people who are on a sex offender list.
Right. That could be underage kids having sex who are like 16, 17,
exactly.
Consensual.
So the range is definitely from what I would say less severe to very severe. And you can see their records. I highly suggest if you have kids, just searching your state's list just to see, because it may just raise some flags. You just never know who your neighbors are.
I've done it. Yeah. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it is. Especially in somewhere like New York City, where it's like millions of people live basically on top of each other.
Yeah.
And there's no way to escape anything
you can see. Yeah. Did X, Y, or Z to like 9-year-old.
Oh, wow.
Female.
I didn't even know it was intense.
Yes. It gets that level.
Not for nothing in New York City, but I've been living in my apartment now going in the fifth year, and I still get mail from old tenants. So clearly New York's not keeping up with their fucking address records. So who knows where they live?
You know? Well, LA Weekly reported that the bachelorette of the show, quote, reportedly refused to go on the winning date, sensing that there was something creepy about bachelor number one, end quote. maybe he was on a sex offender list. According to People magazine, Rodney, quote, was selected by the show because he was tall, handsome, and charming. Producers did not conduct a background check. So there you go. Well, clearly not. I mean, I feel like nowadays, I think we work closely enough with casting. I feel like we know there's a lot of background check and like
mental
wellness.
Yeah, because they don't want to find out that a fucking sex offender was on the goddamn Dating Game.
Maybe he's the reason they did this.
He's one of the reasons.
Right? Talk about bad PR.
The industry was like, we need to be a little more buttoned up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Also, it's so good she declined the date.
For sure.
Because
who knows?
Trust your hunch, dude. Trust your hunch.
Detectives jump on all this information. They set up a lineup with Rodney and people from the beach that day. They all ID'd Rodney.
Wow.
Rodney was a convicted criminal who took an 8-year-old girl named Tali Shapiro off the streets of Hollywood in 1968. He raped and beat her, according to the Los Angeles Times. Tali told Mark of a Killer, quote, "A man approached me in a car and asked where I was going. And I told him I didn't talk to strangers, and that's when he said he knew my parents. And I got in the car, and once I got in the car, he suggested that we stop by his place because he wanted to show me a picture." End
Matt,
quote.
How do you, like, tell your kids, like, there's stranger danger, right? But, like, how are they going to know if they're like, well, I know mom and dad. Like, what, do you say something to them about this?
We had a code word when I was a kid.
Was it a code word? Like, is that?
We don't have a code word, but.
Oh, so if they say, like, bananas, they're cool.
It was something like that.
I just said, like, you don't go with anybody that you don't, even if they say that they know me or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care, don't go with them.
And also, stranger danger is not nearly as much of a problem as people they already know.
Exactly.
That's good point.
Way more of a problem.
So true.
So, it's not even almost worth worrying about the stranger danger.
Totally.
Thing.
Right.
I feel like in the 70s, we've talked so many about, I think this is all set in the 70s as well, there were so many kids being abducted in plain sight type of stuff. And so there was this, I think we could say, like, false awareness that it's always the stranger. But as Matt points out, it seems
it's usually
to be
someone you know.
It's the people you know. It's crazy.
Well, I think, you know, even when we talked about Madeline McCann and I just finished that Netflix series, you know, a lot of people assumed it was the parents, at least, to consider because it's usually someone you know.
Right.
Not that they seemed overly sadistic and weird, but just because like, well, they had access. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Luckily for her, a good Samaritan had seen her get in the car and called the police thinking it could possibly have been a kidnapping. He followed Rodney's car and gave police his address. So
wow.
What are the odds of that?
I just read a really interesting article about how it was about school shootings and how like innocent bystanders are actually the first responders now.
Oh.
Because sometimes, you know, if a shooting happens, I could create a tourniquet for you and help. And like everyone needs the basic knowledge of helping people out. And I think with all these true crime documentaries and everyone going out, like, listen, Elizabeth Smart being found by a woman, you know, because it looked suspicious.
Yeah.
If everyone's sort of aware of these signs, we can all kind of come together and help solve these cases.
Yeah,
I think it's great.
I love that. An officer in Hollywood named Chris got the call. He remembers the horrors of the day very well, telling Mark of a Killer, quote, "I saw the car parked on the side of this house. So I called dispatch and I requested some backup units. I knocked on the door. A male person appeared at the door, pulled the curtain aside. He had a look on him of rage on his eyes, so I asked him to please open the door. He told me that he had just gotten out of the shower and that he needed to get dressed. He had no water on him or wet hair. He was completely nude. I told him, 'You need to open the door. I have to talk to you.' At that point, as he left and closed the blind, I heard some moaning coming in from within the residence. So I pulled my service revolver out of my right hand. I kicked the door open, and the first thing I saw was this young girl lying on the floor covered in blood. She had a solid steel bar across her neck. She had a look of death upon her. The suspect, he had fled out the back door," end quote. I mean, can you imagine
seeing that? Could you imagine being in that?
I mean, it's incredible too, because that Good Samaritan and police officer, it was just a hunch, saved her life.
Exactly.
And yeah, the Good Samaritan, I mean, you know, so many people would be like, well, it could be, it couldn't be, I don't know. But like,
God forbid I'm wrong.
He's following the person home, reporting the address. I mean, that's a commitment.
Yeah.
You know?
Talk about trusting your gut here.
Totally.
I mean, yeah, it could have been 1 second of him being like, oh, I got to go get milk for my wife. Like, and him being like, fuck it, to actually taking the time.
Well, you know, I would say working at Oxygen doing the show, I find that I am on high alert on the subway, when I'm walking down the sidewalk. I'm always kind of like assessing situations.
Yeah.
Just, you know, because listen, you and I are really good at finding the red flags, I'd say,
totally,
at this point. So I'm always kind of scanning rooms, keeping my eye out on Matt, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. By the way, I was having drinks with a friend on Friday, and she said She lives in like a not great area of Brooklyn.
Okay.
And she asked me and Carson to walk her home because we were out late. And we were like, sure, no problem. And she had told us a story about how she was coming home. She lives there with her boyfriend, but her boyfriend is in the restaurant industry. So he literally doesn't come home until like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
So she comes home a lot by herself. And as she's walking to her apartment building, she sees this guy like fuddling with like the keys and realized that he was breaking into the apartment. Her apartment building as she was going in, and she stood right up behind him with like her her cell phone, you know, like kind of like ready to call 911, kind of like at the ready.
Yeah.
And as soon as he saw her, he busted open the door. He opened the door for her and then fled. Because he got so fucking scared because he finally... And she was like, I literally just caught... But he ran so fast, I couldn't see his face. I couldn't really call the cops. But I was like, yeah, we'll walk you home every night. Like, not a big deal. But, like, how scary and terrifying is that? And that's just catching someone potentially doing something bad.
Totally.
Because you and Carson are so
tough. Darren's very tough.
Well, first off, I am.
Yes.
And second off, I feel like you're less likely to maybe, you know, attack
in a group. Yeah, yeah, for
like
sure.
Than a single female. But yeah. Matt, don't make me fucking kick your ass.
All right.
Let me fucking do this.
All right. Well, let's get back to this story. He says, quote, as we secured the scene, it was decided that she was deceased, continues Chris. Quote, I couldn't leave her like that, poor little girl. So I took the bar off her neck as I did that and I put it to the side. And within 20 seconds, I hear gagging and saw that she was gagging and starting to breathe, end quote.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. So Rodney actually dropped his wallet and was quickly ID'd, but remained on the run for 3 years.
I was expecting like 3 days.
Right. Me too.
3 hours.
Like Ted Bundy, like escape from prison, and then like we catch him later.
Right.
At his residence was hundreds of photographs of young girls, potential victims or targets. It turned out, which isn't surprising considering if he took all these mementos.
Totally.
It turned out Rodney was a student at UCLA at the time, and police interviewed his professor.
I didn't realize he was a student. I had heard of this case before. I didn't know he was a student.
Well, about the interview, an officer told CBS News, quote, he was a snake charmer. I went and talked to his professor at UCLA. He says, Rod Alcala wouldn't hurt anybody. He's a great guy. He truly believed that, you know, and a lot of people did, end quote. Authorities started a nationwide manhunt for Rodney. According to ThoughtCo, quote, Alcala, now using the name John Berger, fled to New York and enrolled in NYU film school from 1968 to 1971. I mean, great fucking years to be in college. Even though he was listed on the FBI's most wanted list, he lived undetected and in full view, end quote.
Wow.
A deputy DA told CBS's 48 Hours that, quote, he made friends. He charmed people.
One thing quickly about John Berger here. I wonder how much easier it was to change your identity like that in 68 versus like now. I mean, I feel like that's not something you can
It feels like such a hassle now, doesn't it? Yeah. I'm like, even if I have to send in my old license for a new one, send it in. Yeah. Literally put it in an envelope. I'm like, ugh.
It's too much.
It's too much.
Yeah, it's too much.
I can't handle it.
Yeah.
He was finally found in New Hampshire working at a summer camp for girls under a fake name. Two of the girls at the camp recognized him on an FBI wanted poster.
Good for them, by the fucking way.
Fucking pay attention, people. Rodney, quote, received 1 year to life. 1 year to life.
That's
and the parole board let him go after 34 months, so less than 3 years. The deputy DA told 48 Hours this, and part of the reason was that Tali and her family had left the country and with no main witness prosecutors, cut Rodney a deal, and he ended up pleading guilty to a lesser charge of child molestation, and he had to register as a sex offender.
Wow, what a great deal for him.
But listen, this is what happens in a court of law, and for sometimes as great as it is for a lot of other people, it can be really shitty for other circumstances, and sometimes lessening something for one means opening up the floodgates to everyone else, and you don't really see it, and it's really hard. It's really difficult.
The prosecutors did say, when I was doing some research, they were shocked at the sentence. It was mind-blowing to 35. They just couldn't believe it. But
yeah, totally.
Well, let him go after 34 months. Like,
Listen, I think, you know, we've talked about this too. It's an imperfect system. It works in some ways really well and other ways it doesn't, you know?
Well, according to LA Weekly, quote, 2 months after he got out of state prison, Alcala was found at Bolsa Chica State Beach with a 13-year-old girl who claimed he'd kidnapped her. He was convicted only of violating parole and giving pot to a minor. End
what?
Quote. The deputy DA told 48 Hours that, quote, he was hired by the Los Angeles Times to work as a typesetter. He took photos at weddings and he was a registered sex offender during all of that. And nobody ever checked.
I really believe this case may have started the background check as we know it today.
I mean, maybe. And like sometimes it takes that to happen. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I know.
But like, Jesus.
I know. We talk about so many of these historic kind of cases that sound crazy in 2019, but back then they could have been sort of the beginnings of why these things happen now. Well, and now in 1979, Rodney is the primary suspect in the death of Robin Samso and several others. All the witnesses from the beach the day Robin was approached positively ID'd him. Then they got a search warrant for his car, which had all tinted windows, another telltale sign of a not good person typically. Inside was a camera with a strap that matched Robin's friend's description.
Also, can we talk about how he's like hiding in plain sight and doing all the stuff and like just out there on dating shows, but like clearly not doing a good enough job that everyone is fucking IDing him?
Well, doesn't it make you think
he's not growing a mustache, not dyeing his hair?
It kind of reminds me of other shows we've done where it's almost as if the killer wants to be caught or something like that, you know, like not necessarily get caught, but see how far he can push the limits.
Well, that's why sometimes they call into the police,
yeah,
you
exactly.
know, and they make it a thing, you know, Zodiac killer.
Yeah, totally.
Being a prime example.
An officer on the case told Mark of a killer, quote, on top of that, the carpeting that you'd find in a station wagon, he removed all that and put in brand new fresh carpet as if he was trying to hide something, end quote. Carpeting in a station wagon.
I'm looking this guy up. I want to see
see what he looks like.
Just look. I don't want to spoil it.
You guys at home,
his
take
hair.
Oh my god.
His hair, right?
Not what I was expecting at this was him on the dating game.
Oh, that's not what I was expecting.
Look him up now.
Very Weird Al.
Yeah.
Old Weird Al. Very. Oh my god, he does look like Weird Al.
Well, with the carpeting details, it was enough for a warrant, and Rodney was arrested. He lived at home with his mother, and when police searched the home, they found a receipt on a table for a storage locker in Seattle. I love when they find receipts or stuff, you know.
Ugh.
When Rodney is detained at the Huntington Beach Police Department, he soon has a visitor, his sister. While speaking in Spanish, Rodney asked her for help, but probably didn't realize the conversation was being recorded.
Idiot.
Yeah, not a smart thing to do. A detective told 48 Hours, quote, at one point he mentions him having a storage locker in Seattle, Washington that the cops don't know about. He says, quote, do me a favor, get the stuff out of there. Get it cleared out, end quote.
I mean, again, like, like you're in plain sight, like you're not even trying at this point to hide it.
Not one of our smarter serial
killers.
It's
crazy. Matt, can I have a refill?
Of course.
Thanks, Matt.
Great. A race begins to get to the unit and cops win. Inside is a trophy case. They find hundreds of photographs, topless photos, naked photos, photos of young women, photos of young boys in positions of vulnerability. Some were out in the woods with Rodney while others were in rooms. That's even creepier to think of, like,
I literally just
woods.
Got goosebumps.
I know. A psychologist told Mark of a Killer, quote, photography means a lot of things to Rodney Alcala. It's an accomplishment because it's a mark of his education.
Thanks, Beth.
It's a fine art, which is a mark of his superiority. Photographs speak to his narcissism and his sense of grandiosity, end quote.
Yeah.
There was also a bag. Inside was dozens of earrings, bracelets, necklaces, brooches, you name it. They were his trophies, as Matt pointed out earlier. Soon, two earrings were identified by Robin's mother. They had hard evidence against him.
Again, he keeps all this in one place. Like, I'm not saying that he should be smarter, right? I'm glad he's so dumb because that helped him get caught, right? And obviously, like, he fled undercover for 3 years, right?
Yeah.
With no one suspecting, none the wiser. But just like, it could have been like, bury the things. Like,
right.
You have a receipt of your storage locker
it's a little bit perfect, isn't it?
It's too perfect.
Yeah.
Well, it was time for Rodney to face the music. He was convicted for the kidnapping and murder of Robin Samso and sentenced to death. But his appeal made it to the California Supreme Court, where his death sentence was thrown out, so a new trial began. Mm-hmm. In August of 1986, he was convicted and sentenced to death again.
I was merely 8 months old at that time.
I wasn't even a glimmer. But on appeal, the case was thrown out for ineffective counsel since Rodney's attorneys didn't try to use an alibi defense.
Sounds familiar.
And then Adnan fucking Syed. Jesus Christ.
Sounds familiar.
His conviction was reversed for a second time. This man has to be the luckiest fucking man.
The luckiest.
By 2001, Rodney had written a book in prison about wrongful conviction.
What?
And he headed into his third trial for the case.
I kind of want to read that.
Like, Talk about like ultimate fake news, but like I kind of do too.
Yeah.
Finally, in 2003, DNA technology had advanced far enough that Rodney's DNA could be connected to samples found at the scenes of Jill Barcombe, Georgia Wisted, Charlotte Lamb, and Jill Parentel.
Well, thank God for DNA. I mean, I feel like...
This is why I'm always told in the fucking Innocence Project. Imagine sitting on death row and like being perfectly innocent. Sitting in jail being perfectly innocent, but let alone sentenced to death.
It's just crazy. I mean...
You can at least have a life. You know what I mean? Like,
we hear about so many of these 1970s murders that are coming around. Obviously, the Golden State Killer is the big one from recent times. It makes me wonder about like... pre like 1900s, like murders that I'm sure there is no DNA evidence left to even test at this point, but you just wonder if this is something systemic.
Listen, I mean, I mean, they found Jack the Ripper, remember that?
That's right.
Like a couple
of
weeks ago, so it's possible. I don't know. I mean, you know, I thought you were like, I wonder what the justice was there. And I was like, they were hanging people because they thought they were witches and like drowning them in like water in the late 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do wonder, like, a piece of cloth found on, you know, I'm thinking of, like, Lizzie Borden. Like, piece of cloth, I wonder if we could have tested that now. It's hard to say, but yeah.
Well, at least we are finally in a good place scientifically. Well, he's finally charged with 5 murders. The prosecutor told Markovic Killer, quote, originally Mr. Alcala had an attorney representing him. Serial killers think they're the smartest person in the courtroom.
Ted Bundy being an example.
So they have a bad habit of firing their lawyers, and that's exactly what Rodney Alcala did. Rodney Alcala was representing himself. End
that's
quote.
My saying to that. That's all my comment. That's my only comment.
Yeah. He questioned Robin Samso's mother, and she told 48 Hours, quote, that was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life, having him ask me questions, end quote.
Because he knows, I think, that it's a mind fuck.
Totally.
He knows that, you know, like having a third party there.
Well, imagine also being the mom and having to be questioned by who is very likely
someone
her
who
killer.
Fucking sodomized or raped your daughter, like, and killed her, like, and you got to talk to this person.
It's so disturbing. Well, Rodney attempted to disgrace her character, according to 48 Hours, claiming that she had brought a gun to court in the previous trial and she didn't deny it. She told 48 Hours, quote, I was going to shoot him right between the eyes if I could have gotten a shot at him, end quote. You know, I obviously violence is never the answer, but you do sympathize with this mentality, I feel like, because, again,
I'm surprised she didn't climb over that fucking court thing and just rip his eyes out. Like, that emotional thing can never go away.
I completely agree. Then things got really bizarre. Rodney wanted to question himself. The prosecutor told Markovic Killer, quote, that was one of the most surreal things I've seen in 25 years as a prosecutor. He began asking himself questions from the stand and he used a different voice. It was like, well, Mr. Alcala, you know, what did you do next? Great question, Mr. Alcala. Let me tell you, end quote.
I thought you were going to go into the Elizabeth Holmes voice.
You guys need to reenact this.
Yeah, I thought we were just like,
all right.
Well, Mr. Alcala, you know, what did you do next?
Great question, Mr. Alcala. Let me tell you. I don't know. That was us doing that. We tried, guys.
We're in fucking DuckTales.
Yes,
that's
exactly
what we're doing.
What's the story, DuckTales? Anyway, Rodney told the jury, quote, if you decide that the death penalty is the appropriate penalty, you instantly become a wannabe killer in waiting, end quote.
I don't understand
that
quote.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Bad point, Rodney. Do not take
don't
a drink.
Don't take a drink, Rodney.
Unfortunately for him, this show did not impress the jury. He was found guilty and sentenced to death for a third time.
I want to know what was going through his mind when he heard that verdict.
I know, that's true.
Like, A, I wonder if he cared, or B...
Yeah.
Was he so devastated? And see, did he really think he was going to get away with it?
Well, that's what I was thinking. Right? When you're sentenced for a third time, you know, what do you think? The prosecutor told Markovic Killer, quote, every couple of years, there's another murder that's solved out of this cache of photographs that were recovered in the storage locker. This is a cautionary tale. Rodney Alcala is a cautionary tale to parole boards across the United States.
Well,
so,
that's true.
Yeah, that's a good, great way to put it.
The photos, we will publish them on Oxygen.com.
Yeah,
the photos. I have them, actually. And one officer said that there might be as many as 1,000 photos in
here.
Oh, my God.
And they have no idea.
Matt's showing
this is so Susan Cox Powell, except more universal, because... Well, I mean, I know Stephen Powell, whatever, had hundreds of other people. Oh, my God.
Yeah, lots of weird pictures.
I mean, and some of these people... they were murdered and they were found out from these photos.
By the way, these are just sitting on Matt's computer. I think at this point, Matt, you might want to delete those. I don't know.
Yeah, please stop putting them in your personal file.
Dropbox.
Before we end, I just have a little bit more stuff about Rod.
Yeah, let's hear it. Yeah.
So he was actually raised in Texas, but his family moved to Mexico, where his father abandoned them. And when he was 12, his mother moved the family to L.A. Okay.
Okay.
Rodney had a complete lack of empathy and a sexual interest in his sister.
That's very normal, right?
At 17, I hope not, because I've got a brother. At 17, Rodney joined the Army, but was discharged in 1964 after being diagnosed with a severe antisocial personality. He actually went to UCLA after, School of Fine Arts, where he got his BFA. It was the same year he kidnapped and raped his first known victim. Mm. Maybe there's something involved with that. I'm not sure. According to 48 Hours, DNA confirmed that Rodney killed two more young women in their homes in Manhattan when he was an NYU film student. He pled guilty to the murders in 2012. So while police have only confirmed 7 kills by Rodney, given the amount of evidence, there may be like many more, considering the thousands of photographs that were on Matt's computer, on Rodney's computer. More bodies have been linked to Rodney through his photos, but he has not been convicted for their murders. A detective told 48 Hours, quote, "I honestly believe in my mind, in my heart, that there's going to be other victims. Seeing how arrogant he was, knowing how charming he apparently was back in the day, and knowing how smart he is, I wouldn't doubt if there's 100, 150, maybe even 200 victims out there," end quote. Rodney Acala is now 76 and sits on death row in California.
Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder too, like, what was his motive? It didn't seem like there was ever a clear motive with this. And was it just, you know, complete narcissism? Like, maybe he didn't want other people to have connections with these victims. I don't know. You never want to
really
know.
Yeah, we don't know enough background, at least to say, like, oh, his mom tortured him when he was a kid and put a metal bar over his neck. You know, like, that, it tracks. Like, and we always bring up Ed Kemper, but that tracks. Like, I'm not saying that ultimately leads to you being a serial killer, but, like, Ed Gein, we knew he had mother issues. Here, you know, he's in the Army. Like, he went to college. He obviously went to NYU and to UCLA. Smart guy. Like, I'm not really sure what the deal is.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's that tragic story. And let's brighten it up a touch, Darren, with some listener shout outs.
Let's do it.
Why don't you take the first one? I think her name is Cyan or Sean. I don't, it depends.
Okay.
We'll go with Cyan, I think.
I think it's Cyan. It could be Sean. Yeah. S-I-A-N.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to butcher your name. It's pretty nonetheless.
It's beautiful,
on Twitter says, "Been binging Martinis and Murder and finally reached the episode where they've caught the East Area rapist. I've waited 71 episodes to get to this."
And I was so excited to hear that someone was listening to this, because remember that news broke and we did a special edition.
That's right.
Martinis and Murder, because we just could not wait till the next episode.
Can't believe we're on like 120 plus. Jesus.
I will say this, you know, we had done another podcast before, you and I, which was just an all topics podcast just for fun. I had done a Glee podcast back in the day, and nothing really makes time feel like it's passing quicker than your episode numbers, I feel like, because now this is like 600 episodes of podcasting for me, and it's like, do I have the time to do things like this? Like, obviously here we do, but I know. It was just kind of crazy.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. Rick in our Facebook group says, "Love the new cover art. It does look like Darren has some mischievous idea cooking." Interesting.
See, thank you, Rick, because my friends like to just like DM me or text me pictures of like what they think that I'm thinking, and it's never that nice.
No,
it's never that nice.
Well, Rick kept it kind of, you know.
No, Rick, you're the love of my life.
Yes, thank you, Rick, for that. All right, well, that's it for this week's episode. Be sure to follow us on social at Jay Thrasher, Carpe Darren, Matt the Bartender.
Follow us on all things.
All things.
And make sure, I mean, I guess you guys don't know when I'm recording, but like it's usually Wednesdays at 4.
That's true.
I always like to do a little John Hand video. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to look at my fucking Instagram stories.
Where did that come from? I don't even know what happened there.
I'm not sure, but I did get a text from my friend RJ, who texted me during the show and said, "I think the best running Insta story thing you have going on is the John Thrasher hands finger thing. It just gets me every time. It's weird, but also hilarious. And because the tone of your voice is so true."
Yeah. Oh, that's a great way to look at that.
I was like, thank you for that.
Thanks, RJ.
Thesis on why you like these fun videos that we do.
Deep dive into Darren's Instagram stories.
Exactly.
All right. We'll see you guys on Thursday's new episode.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah.